We thank you for joining us here at Turner Tech. My name is Tavares Wright, and this is
Jovan L. Pierre.
Okay, my name is James M. Moss.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. And I'm glad to be here. I hope that what I may say to you might be of some help to you.
Yes, we feel that this is an honor for you to come and talk about, you know, segregation things that happened in the past.
I feel as though it's an honor to come and talk to you. I would hope that I can say something that may kind of inspire.
Okay.
Can you please describe when and where you were born and a bit about your parents and grandparents?
Okay. I was born in Nassau, Bahamas. At an early age, my mother sent me to an island called Crooked Island, spelled C-R-O-O-K-E-D Island. And I like to make note of this. The name Crooked has nothing to do with the character of the people that lived on that island, okay? The name is only because of the physical shape of the island. That's why they call it Crooked Island. The people were fine people. And my grandmother was superb. And you know, I'm not gonna say anything bad about my grandmother and mother anyway, so she was superb. In living in Crooked Island, I have experienced a whole beautiful life. It was a kind of primitive life. It was not kind of primitive, it was primitive. Like at night, it was night. Like in the city, nighttime, you only know it's night because you see the light on, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't even think about night because you're doing the same thing like you do daytime. Nighttime, there was night. It was dark. And the only light you see is lamplighters and the moon if the moon is out. That was kind of the place that I was living in. And you enjoy yourself. You do most of your enjoyment during the daytime because at night, naturally, it is dark and you can't do too much. But they used to have fun at night. They have little dances and people put up little lanterns and whatnot. And people, social things that they had, and they have a wonderful time. People get married, and people, just like in any other big city, life goes on there. One of the things that I experienced, my first experience of a white man was in Crooked Island. This was my first time I saw a white man. And he looked, boy, I'm telling you, he looked so different. You can imagine you've never seen a white person in all your life. And then here comes this white person. And he was standing there, and the sun was setting, and he was standing like in this, and the sun was shining on him, and then looked like his blood was going to come out of him or something. Mm-hmm. So I investigated him further during the night. He was a missionary. With my own private self, I investigated him, and I discovered that he was a man like anybody else, and nothing to be afraid of. Any other person?
When did you move to Miami?
I moved to Miami in 1944. I was 17 years old. My father sent for me. He was here. And he sent for me, and I came in at the International Airport in 36th Street. And when I got to Miami, oh boy, I was uptight. I said, hey man, all this light. Have me some ball here.
so you wasn't used to the light?
Oh yes, I was used to the light in Nassau, but I liked light.
Oh, okay.
You understand?
Right.
I didn't like the darkness thing. Right. Although I enjoy myself as a youngster, it was all right. But when you become 17 now, you begin to look into different areas.
Right.
And I thought maybe light was, well, young people, you know, they want to be in what's happening, you know. And I thought that what I would be in what's happening. But as I drove down with my father, as he began to drive down the street and we drove home, and I noticed that the light began to diminish, you know, less light.
Mm-hmm.
Until we got in the spot, there was no light.
Right.
And I said, you mean to me, I'm going back to this Crooked Island thing. Then he said, son, there where you going to be living. So I said, that kind of killed my spirit. But my uncle was living in Miami, in the city of Miami, and then my father gave me permission to go to visit him on weekends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there I discovered my first, I had my first encounter with segregation, okay?
So it was a shock to you.
It was a shock to me. It was a shock to me, and you know, because I couldn't believe, in a sense, I couldn't believe it. Like, but my father was trying to see if he could try to keep me try to teach me or try to get me in a position where it wouldn't be too much of a shock. You understand what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So when I got to go to the bus stop to buy my ticket, my father had already told me, you're going to have to stand on the porch until the lady comes and pick up your money. So I stood on the porch, and the lady comes and pick up my money. No, asked me what I wanted. I told her I wanted a ticket. And the lady comes in to ride the bus, and she came and brought the ticket to me. And that was my first encounter. You couldn't go inside to buy the ticket. You understand?
Right.
It's only white people can go in there. You couldn't go in there because you were black. So secondly, I encountered the segregation with the bus. With the bus, you stand in line like everybody else, and I noticed the white man took all the tickets from the white people. Mm-hmm. And after all the tickets had been taken from the white people, then he began taking tickets from black people. And I don't care what position you were standing, how near you were, because I had my flag flipping in his eye all the time. He was not considering your ticket until whenever he gets those white people on the bus. When you get on that bus, if all the seats were taken by white people, you stand up. If all the seats were taken by white people and there were one or two up front, you still couldn't sit down. Because there was a big sign there that says, colored seat from the red. It was a big sign, and this was a state law, you know. This was a legal thing, as far as the Constitution is concerned. It was not legal, but it was a legal thing as far as the states was concerned. Mm-hmm. That black people sit in the back and white people sit in the front.
Right.
So if you violated that law, let's say for instance, I say, well, I'm going to sit in the front. So if you sit in the front, they stop the bus, call the police, they put you in jail. That's what they did with a woman named
Rosa Parks.
Right. See what I'm saying?
Right. So. Okay. How did you feel? Did it make you feel in a way by you having to sit in the back of the bus, not to get on the bus?
It make you feel in a way that you don't want to get on the bus, yes. But you do realize if you're going to travel, and if you don't have a car,
right.
You're going to have to get on the bus.
Right.
Or the train, whatever. It was the same thing with the train now.
Right.
Do you remember, like, what part of town did you move to?
What kind of one?
The town that you moved to when you first came to Miami.
Okay, oh yeah, I moved when I first came to Miami. My father took me to a place called Redland, Florida. And that's down there by Homestead, down in the citrus grove and the farmland down there, okay? So I was down there with my father until after I become, I think it was almost 18, I moved to Miami to live by myself. My father told me that I could live over Miami, but what he did, he made me feel as though I was going to be living by myself. No, he made sure that I was living with some old lady in the house, and she was just as strict as my daddy. But I enjoyed the mere fact that I had moved out of that darkness down there and come up, because enlightenment was the thing that I was seeking. In other words, I not only the light itself, like the physical electric light.
Right.
I'm talking about light, like learning something and doing something, you know? That's what's my thing.
Right.
All right. Do you remember any more, like, memories?
About segregation?
Segregation.
Oh, yeah. Did I tell you the whole story about Bell Telephone Company? I think I did. If I didn't, I've been saying it so much today, I guess. I could remember police took me to jail once.
For
guess what they did, just what happened. I was driving, coming from Northwest 2nd Avenue over town. And they were in an unmarked car, right?
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and they were blocking the road. So I pumped my horn, pump. And he looked at me. He didn't have on any police clothes now. And he started talking again. So I pumped, pump. And he came down there and said, "What's the matter with you, boy?" I said, "You're blocking the street. I want to go." "You get out of the car." Then he showed me the little piece of bag. So I got out. And I got out. Before I got out, he told, "You walk that straight line." Had a line there, you know the line in the street right. that separates right. the traffic. Right. You walk that line, and when I start to step on the line, say, "Oh yeah, you drunk." Before I step, and took me to jail.
So he wanted a reason to put you in jail.
Oh yeah, he put me to jail. That's just to show you how much authority they thought they have. And the same thing is happening now. That's why I'm so. I would like to kind of drop something to you young people. Stand up for your right, but not in the position that, not so much that you're going to get yourself shot. Mm-hmm. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Stand up for your right, but don't push it in a way where you're going to get yourself hurt. He did that simply because he had the authority to do so. Took me down there. Took me to jail. And then, you know, let me tell you, when he got me down to jail, the sergeant asked him, "What you bring this man back down here for?" And he said something to the sergeant, like disobeying or something. I don't know what he said to the sergeant. So they kept me down there overnight. Mm-hmm. Overnight they kept me there. Next morning you go to the judge, and after expressing to the judge what happened, the judge lets you go. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But he has already done his damage.
Right, mentally.
And he done the damage to me.
Right.
You see, because he had made me stayed in jail for a night in which was wrong.
Right.
And so I go to the before the judge, he didn't even show up.
Who, the cop didn't show up?
He didn't even show up. So the judge said, "Go home." You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for young people, you know, you young men, be careful. I may have a way of pushing you, because they want you to react to certain things so they can have this, use this so-called power. You understand? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're wrong as hell, but they will do it. And when you get down there, they have these other people who kind of encourage them and who somehow don't look at it from the right point of view. As you know, if you read the newspaper, they have a whole lot of them down there now charged with doing some wrong things some years ago. So be careful and don't put yourself in the position where you're going to be some policeman going to have to come by for you. Know, don't like arguing and all of that and somebody got to call the police. Don't put yourself in that condition. It doesn't even make sense. Argument come up usually is because two people don't understand what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you have an argument. It's better just walk away. Say, "Okay, man, you're right. I'm sorry." And just walk off. Instead, sometimes trying to push your belief, and sometimes you'd be right. But that your right sometimes could cause you little problems. You know, if you see where it's going to cause you to hurt someone or someone hurts you, it's better to walk off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, how did your school handle the effort to integrate?
Okay. My school did not have that problem. Okay, because as I said, I'm from the Bahamas, right?
Right.
I didn't have that. I don't know how the schools handled the effort of integration here in Miami. I couldn't very well tell you how they did that. But I know they had there was a problem here in Miami in getting the school integrated. I know. I think it was Father Theo Gibson's son was one of the first. He tried to get his son. He was the head of the NAACP, and he tried to get his son into the integrated school. And it started with his son and some others. And I know there was some problems. I know there was a whole lot of talk. And the school board did some things, and the court passed a whole lot of laws and all kind of thing. I know it was a whole lot of problem.
Right. Well, what thoughts do you have about the changes that were made in the 1950s and the 1960s?
I thought about the changes. I think we have made some changes.
Right.
Uh, I think we have made some changes. We have done well. I think we have done well. We could have done better. Was it our fault we didn't do better? No, I don't think it's our fault. I think that the same old evil, the segregation evil, still exists, still lurking underneath. It comes in different ways, different clothing, so to speak. But it's the same old thing trying to hold black people down. And it does exist there. And it's going to depend on you young people to root it out. And how you go about root it out? By getting yourself an education. That's how you root it out. You don't root it out with no guns and knives and all that foolishness, because that would never work. You root it out by educating yourselves and applying your education where it would be better for you and your children. So that's what I'm depending on all of you to do. Get yourself an education. Be prepared. Right. And don't drop out and all of that and give up. Don't do that. Your parents are sending you to school, and your parents are not wrong. They're trying to help you. Mm-hmm. Your parents send you to school so you can be able to help yourself, right?
Yes.
Do that. Go to school and make your parents happy. They'll be happy when you go to school and finish your education. Make them feel good that their work was not in vain. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when you become a day when you're going to have children.
Right.
And you're going to probably do the same thing.
Tell them the same
You understand
thing.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So how you root out the evil of segregation? By education. Right. That's how you root it out. And that's go for you. It goes for the other side, too. Mm-hmm. The white people got to be educated. They got to understand that it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing for the country. It's not a good thing for America. And I think, you know, when I look at it from September the 11th, right?
Okay.
September 11th says a whole lot to Americans. We need to be Americans.
Right.
And whether you have that feeling of want to be nice and one feeling about America or not, I can tell you this: when you get out there among the evil that Bush talk about, that evil look at all American as the same.
Right. Like putting all your nuts in one basket.
That's right. That evil looks at you just like you look at that white man. And why? Because you are an American. They don't care about you being black. They may tell you that, try to make you believe that, but that's not so. You are an American. And because you're an American, you're guilty of anything that America does.
Well, I know this tape has been short, but is there at least one more story or anything you want to say before it's time to close on?
My only thing I want to say I to you all before I close out is I'm somewhat honored to speak with you today.
Yes, we appreciate that.
I would like for you young people to do your best, okay? Mm-hmm. Too many of our young people who find themselves in prison nowadays. I mean, you know, every time you take up the young newspaper nowadays, 17 years, and it seems like the 17 years was a magic year or something. 17 and 18 years old boys is killing up each other, shooting up each other, and all that kind of stuff, man. And the prison, over two-thirds, I think, of the prison population, young black men. Now, what is it? We not eating no different food from them other people eating. So what is it that making us so different from them, in a sense, right, that getting in so much problem, so much trouble? Yeah. So my thing would be, what would make me feel good is to know that I have played some part in helping a young man to realize or to get what he wants to get, good things. And I think all young people want good things. Right. Sometimes they want it so badly they wind up in jail trying to get good things. But there's a way of getting good things, and that way is to get yourself educated. After education, you can afford to get, and most of the time you can afford to get anything you want to get. Education. You go to prison, when you come out of prison, you can't even get a job. Mm-hmm. You can't even get a job. How are you going to get a right? Most of the time you wind up in prison again, trying to get that same good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Get yourself an education. Get yourself an education. That's the thing. I know it because I know the little that I had is what caused me to achieve what I had achieved. And what I achieved, not much. But I've never been to prison. You know what I mean? I never killed no one and never shot anybody. And I think that's a good accomplishment. Even that is an accomplishment. I don't have no million of dollars, but I'm not a pauper. I'm not depending on the government to take care of me or my family. Right. So it means that get yourself an education.
Well, we thank you for your time, sir.
Okay.
It's been an honor.